Detritus sat and steamed. Now he felt hungry, not for food, but for things to think about. As the temperature sank, the efficiency of his brain increased even more. It needed something to do. He calculated the number of bricks in the wall, first in twos, and then in tens, and finally in sixteens. The numbers formed up and marched past his brain in terrified obedience. Division and multiplication were discovered. Algebra was invented and provided an interesting diversion for a minute or two. And then he felt the fog of numbers drift away and looked up and saw the sparkling, distant mountains of calculus. Trolls evolved in high, rocky, and above all, in cold places. Their silicone brains were used to operating at low temperatures, but down on the muggy plains, the heat built up slowed them down and made them dull. It wasn't that only stupid trolls came down to the city. Trolls who decided to come down to the city were often quite smart, but they became stupid. Detritus was considered moronic, even by city troll standards. But that was simply because his brain was naturally optimized for a temperature seldom reached in Ankh-Morpork, even during the coldest winter. Now his brain was nearing its ideal temperature of operation. Unfortunately, this was pretty close to a troll's optimum point of death. Part of his brain gave some thought to this. There was a high probability of rescue. That meant he'd have to leave. That meant him become stupid again, as sure as a long equation that my font made really small so I can't even read it. Better make the most of it, then. He went back to the world of numbers. So complex that they had no meaning, only a transitional point of view, and got on with freezing to death as well. Dibbler reached the Butcher's Guild very shortly after Cuddy. The big red doors had been kicked open, and a small butcher was sitting just inside them, rubbing his nose. Which way did he go? That way. And in the guild's main hall, the master butcher, Gerhard Stock, was staggering around in circles. This was because Cuddy's boots were planted on his chest. The dwarf was hanging onto the man's vest like a yachtsman tacking into a gale, and whirling his axe round and round in front of Sock's face. "You give it to me right now, or I'll make you eat your own nose." A crowd of apprentice butchers were trying to keep out of the way. "But don't you argue with me. I'm an officer of the watch, I am." "But you've got one last chance, mister. Give it to me right now." Sock shut his eyes. "What is it you want?" The crowd waited. "Ah," said Cuddy. "Ah ha ha. Didn't I say?" "No. I'm pretty sure I did, you know." "You didn't." "Oh. Well, it's the key to the pork futures warehouse, if you must know." Cuddy jumped down. "Why?" The axe hovered in front of his nose again. "I was just asking," said Sock, in a desperate and distant voice. "There's a man of the watch in there." "Freezing to death," said Cuddy. There was quite a crowd around them when they finally got to the main door. Lumps of ice clinked on the stones, and there was a rush of super cold air. Frost covered the floor, and the rows of hanging carcasses on their backward journey through time. It also covered a detritus-shaped lump squatting in the middle of the floor. They carried it out into the sunlight. "Should his eyes be flashing on and off like that?" said Dibbler. "Can you hear me?" shouted Cuddy. "Detritus?" Detritus blinked. Ice slid off him in the day's heat. He could feel the cracking up of the marvelous universe of numbers. The rising temperature hit his thoughts like a flamethrower caressing a snowflake. "Say something," said Cuddy. Towers of intellect collapsed as the fire roared through Detritus's brain. "Hey, look at this," said one of the apprentices. The inner walls of the warehouse were covered with numbers, equations as complex as a neural network had been scraped in the frost. At some point in the calculation, the mathematician had changed from using numbers to using letters, and then letters themselves hadn't been sufficient. Brackets, like cages, enclosed expressions, which were, to normal mathematicians, what a city is to a map. They got simpler as the goal neared. Simpler, yet containing in the flowing lines of their simplicity a Spartan and wonderful complexity. Cuddy stared at them. He knew he'd never be able to understand them in 100 years. The frost crumbled in the warmer air. The equations narrowed as they were carried on down the wall and across the floor to where the troll had been sitting, until they became just a few expressions that appeared to move and sparkle like with a life of their own. This was maths without numbers, pure as lightning. They narrowed to a point, and at the point was just the very simple symbol, equals. Equals what? Said Cuddy. Equals what? The frost collapsed. Cuddy went outside. Detritus was now sitting in a puddle of water, surrounded by a crowd of human onlookers. Can't one of you get him a blanket or something? He said. A very fat man said, huh? Who'd use a blanket after it had been on a troll? Huh, yes, good point, said Cuddy. He glanced at the 5 holes in Detritus's breastplate. They were at about head height for a dwarf. Could you come over here for a moment, please? The man grinned at his friends and sauntered over. I expect you can see the holes in this armor, right? Said Cuddy. CMOT Dibbler was a survivor, in the same way that rodents and insects can sense an earthquake ahead of the first tremors, so he could tell if something big was about to go down on the street. Cuddy was being too nice. When a dwarf was nice like that, it meant he was saving up to be nasty later on. Go about my business, then, he said, and backed away. I've got nothing against dwarfs, mind you, said the fat man. I mean, dwarfs is practically people, in my book, just shorter humans, almost. But trolls, well, they're not the same as us, right? Excuse me, gangway, said Dibbler, achieving with his cart the kind of getaway customarily associated with vehicles that have fluffy dice on the windscreen. That's a nice coat you've got there, said Cuddy. Dibbler's cart went around the corner on one wheel. It's a nice coat, said Cuddy. You know what you should do with a coat like that? The man's forehead wrinkled. Take it off right now, said Cuddy, and give it to the troll. Why, you little... The man grabbed Cuddy by his shirt and wrenched him upward. The troll's hand moved very quickly. There was a scrape of metal. Man and dwarf made an absolute stationary tableau for a few seconds. Cuddy had been brought up almost level with the man's face, and watched with... interest as the eyes began to water. Let me down, said Cuddy. Gently. I make involuntary muscle movements if I'm startled. The man did so. You take off your coat. Good. Just pass it over. Thank you. Your axe, the man murmured. Axe, my axe. Cuddy looked down. Well. Hardly knew I was holding it there. My axe. Well, there's a thing. The man was trying to stand on tiptoe. His eyes were watering. The thing about this axe, said Cuddy, the interesting thing, is this a throwing axe. I was champion 3 years running up at Copperhead. I could draw and split a twig 30 yards away in 1 second. Behind me. And I was ill that day. A bilious attack. He backed away. The man sank gratefully onto his heels. Cuddy draped the coat over the troll's shoulders. Come on your feet, he said. Let's get you home. The troll lumbered upright. How many fingers am I holding up? Said Cuddy. Detritus peered. 2 and 1, he suggested. It'll do, said Cuddy, for a start. Mr. Cheese looked over the bar at Captain Vimes, who hadn't moved for an hour. The bucket was used to serious drinkers, who drank without pleasure, but with a sort of determination never to see sobriety again. But this was something new. This was worrying. He didn't want a death on his hands. There was no one else in the bar. He hung his apron on a nail and hurried out toward the watch house, almost colliding with Carrot and Angle in the doorway. "Oh, I'm glad that's you, Corporal Carrot," he said. "You better come. It's Captain Vimes. What happened to him? What's happened to him?" "I don't know. He's drunk an awful lot. I thought he was off the stuff." "I think," said Mr. Cheese cautiously, "that this is not the case anymore. A scene somewhere near Quarry Lane." "Where are we going? Or where are we going?" "I'm going to get someone to have a look at you." "Not Dwarf Doctor. There must be someone up here who knows how to slap some quick drying cement on you. Or whatever you do. Should you be oozing like that?" "Dunno, never oozed before." "Where are we? Where are we?" "Dunno. Never been down here before." The area was on the windward side of the cattle yards in the slaughterhouse district. That meant it was shunned as living space by everyone except trolls, to whom the organic odors were about as relevant and noticeable as the smells of granite would be to humans. The old joke went, "The trolls live next to the cattle yard. What about the stench? Oh, the cattle don't mind." Which was daft. Trolls didn't smell, except to other trolls. There was a slabby look about the buildings here. They had been built for humans, but adapted by trolls, which broadly had meant kicking the doorways wider and blocking up the windows. It was still daylight. There weren't any trolls visible. "Ugh," said Detritus. "Come on, big man," said Cuddy, pushing Detritus along like a tug pushes a tanker. "Lance Constable Cuddy? Yes? You a dwarf. This is Quarry Lane. You found here. You in deep trouble. We're city guards. Christ appraise. He not give a coprolith about that stuff." Cuddy looked around. "What do you people use for doctors, anyway?" The troll face, a troll face appeared in a doorway. And another. And another. What Cuddy had thought was a pile of rubble turned out to be a troll. There were suddenly trolls everywhere. "I'm a guard," thought Cuddy. "That's what Sergeant Cullen said. Stop being a dwarf and start being a watchman." "That's what I am. Not a dwarf. A watchman. They gave me a badge, shaped like a shield. City Watch. That's me. I carry a badge. I wish it was a lot bigger." Vimes was sitting quietly at a table in the corner of the bucket. There were some pieces of paper and a handful of metal objects in front of him. But he was staring at his fist. It was lying on the table, clenched so tight the knuckles were white. "Captain Vimes," said Carrot, waving a hand in front of his eyes. There was no response. "How much has he had?" 2 nips of whiskey, that's all." "That shouldn't do this to him, even on an empty stomach," said Carrot. Angua pointed at the neck of the bottle, protruding from Vimes' pocket. "I don't think he's been drinking on an empty stomach," she said. "I think he put some alcohol in it first." "Captain Vimes," said Carrot again. "What's he holding in his hand?" said Ingwa. "I don't know. This is bad. I've never seen him like this before. Come on. You take the stuff. I'll take the captain." "He hasn't paid for his drink," said Mr. Cheese. Angua and Carrot looked at him. "On the house?" said Mr. Cheese. There was a wall of trolls around Cuddy. It was as good a choice of word as any. Right now, their attitude was more of surprise than menace, such as dogs might show if a cat had sauntered over into the kennels. But when they'd finally got used to the idea that he really existed, it was probably only a matter of time before this state of affairs no longer obtained. Finally, one of them said, "What dost then?" "He a man of the watch, same as me," said Detritus. "Him a dwarf, he a watchman. Him got bloody cheek. I know that." A stubby troll finger prodded Cuddy in the back. The trolls crowded in. "I count to 10," said Detritus. "Then any troll not going about that troll's business, he a sorry troll." "You Detritus," said a particularly wide troll. "Everyone know you stupid troll. You join watch because stupid troll. You can't count to..." Wham! 1, said Detritus. 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The recumbent troll looked up in amazement. That Detritus, him counting. There was a whirring noise and an axe bounced off the wall near Detritus's head. There were dwarfs coming up the street with a purposeful and deadly air. The trolls scattered. Cuddy ran forward. "What are you lot doing?" he said. "Are you mad or something?" A dwarf pointed a trembling finger at Detritus. What's that? He's a watchman. Looks like a troll to me. Get it? Cuddy took a step backward and produced his axe. I know you, Strong in the Arm, he said. What's this all about? You know watchmen, said Strong in the Arm. The watch say a troll killed Bjorn Hammerhawk. They've found the troll. No, that's not. There was a sound behind Cuddy. The trolls were back, armed for dwarf. Detritus turned around and waved a finger at them. Any troll move, he said, and I start counting. Hammerhawk was killed by a man, said Cuddy. Captain Vimes thinks the watch have got the troll, said a dwarf. Damn rocks. Grit suckers, monoliths, eaters of rats. Ha, huh, I've been a man only hardly any time, said Detritus, and already I fed up with you stupid trolls. What you think humans say, eh? Oh, them ethnic. Them don't know how to behave in big city. Go around waving clubs at the drop of a thing you wear on head. We're watchmen, said Cuddy. Our job is to keep the peace. Good, said Strong in the Arm. Go and keep it safe somewhere until we need it. This not Coon Valley, said Detritus. That's right, shouted a dwarf at the back of the crowd. This time we can see you. And trolls and dwarfs were pouring in at either end of the street. What would Corporal Carrot do at a time like this? Whispered Cuddy. He'd say, you bad people, make me angry. You stop toot sweet. And then they go away, right? Yeah. What would happen if we tried that? We look in gutter for our heads. I think you're right. You see that alley? A nice alley. It'd say hello. You outnumbered 256 plus 64 plus 8 plus 2 plus 1 to 1. Drop in and see me. A cloud bounced off Detritus's helmet. Run! The two watchmen sprinted for the alley. The impromptu armies watched them, and then, differences momentarily forgotten, gave chase. Where'd this go? It goes away from the people chasing us. I like this alley. Behind them, the pursuers, suddenly trying to make progress in a gap barely wide enough to accommodate a troll, realized that they were pushing and shoving with their mortal enemies and started to fight one another in the quickest, nastiest, and above all, narrowest battle ever held in the city. Cuddy waved Detritus to a halt and peered around a corner. I think we're safe, he said. All we have to do is get out of the other end of this and get back to the watch house, okay? He turned around, failed to see the troll, took a step forward, and vanished temporarily from the world of men. Oh no, said Sergeant Cullen. He promised he wasn't going to touch it anymore. Look, he's had a whole bottle. What is it? Bear hugger? Said Nobby. Shouldn't think so. He's still breathing. Come on. Help me up with him. The night watch, clustered around Carrot, had deposited Captain Vimes on a chair in the middle of the watch house floor. Angua picked out the bottle and looked at the label. CMOT Dibbler's Genuine Authentic Soggy Mountain Dew, she read. He's going to die. It says 150% proof. Nah, that's just old Dibbler's advertising, said Nobby. They ain't got no proof, just circumstantial evidence. Why hasn't he got his sword? Said Angua. Vimes opened his eyes. The first thing he saw was the concerned face of Nobby. Arr, he said. Swore. Get away. Hurry. Hooray. What? Said Nobby Cullen. No more wash. I'll go. I think he's a bit drunk, said Carrot. Drunk? I'm not drunk. You wouldn't dare call me a drunk if I was sober. Give him some coffee, said Angua.
I reckon he's beyond our coffee, said Cullen. Nobby, nip along to Fat Sally's in Squeeze Belly Alley and get a jug of their special clutching stuff. Not a metal jug, mind. Vimes blinked as they manhandled him into a chair. I'll go away, he said. Bang, bang. Lay Sybil going to be really mad, said Nobby. You know he promised to leave it alone. Captain Vimes, said Carrot. How many fingers am I holding up? How many hands, then? Four. Blimey, I haven't seen him like this for years, said Cullen. Here, let me try something. Want another drink, Captain? He certainly doesn't need a... Shut up. I know what I'm doing. Another drink, Captain Vimes? I've never known him not to be able to give a... Loud, clear, yes, said Colton, standing back. I think we better get him up up to his room. I'll take him, poor chap, said Garrett. He lifted Vimes easily and slung him over his shoulder. I hate to see him like this, said Ingua, following him into the hallway and up the stairs. He only drinks when he gets depressed, said Colton. Garrett, why does he get depressed? Sometimes it's because he hasn't had a drink. The house in Sudopolis Yard had originally been a Ramkin family residence. Now the first floor was occupied by the guards on an ad hoc basis. Garrett had a room. Nobby had rooms consecutively, four so far, moving out when the floor became hard to find, and Vimes had a room. More or less. It was hard to tell. Even a prisoner in a cell manages to stamp his personality on it somewhere. But Angua had never seen such an unlived-in room. This is where he lives, said Angua. Good grief. What did you expect? I don't know. Anything. Something. Not nothing. There was a joyless iron bedstead. The springs and mattress had sagged so that they formed a sort of mold, forcing anyone who got into it to instantly fold into a sleeping position. There was a washstand under a broken mirror. On the stand was a razor, carefully aligned toward the hub, because Vimes shared the folk belief that this kept it sharp. There was a brown wooden chair, with the cane seat broken, and a small chest at the foot of the bed, and that was all. I mean, at least a rug, said Angua. A picture on the wall, something. Carrot deposited Vimes on the bed, where he flowed unconsciously into the shape. Haven't you got something in your room? Angua asked. Yes, I've got a cutaway diagram of number 5 shaft at home. It's very interesting, Strata. I helped cut it. And some books and things. Captain Vimes isn't really an indoors kind of person. There's not even a candle. He finds his way to bed by memory, he says. Or an ornament, or anything. There's a sheet of cardboard under the bed, Carrot volunteered. I remember I was with him in Filigree Street when he found it. He said, there's a month's souls in this, if I'm any judge. He was very pleased about that. He can't even afford boots? I don't think so. I know Lady Sybil offered to buy him all the new boots he wanted, and he got a bit offended about that. He seems to try to make them last. But you can buy boots, and you can get less than him, and you get less than him. And you send money home. He must drink it all, the idiot. Don't think so. I don't think he'd touch this stuff for months. Lady Sybil got him onto cigars. Vimes snored loudly. How can you admire a man like this? Said Angua. He's a very fine man. Angua raised the lid of the wooden chest with her foot. Hey, I don't think you should do that, said Carrot wretchedly. I'm just looking, said Angua. There's no law against that. In fact, under the Privacy Act of 1467, it is, and there's only old boots and stuff, and some paper. She reached down and picked up a crudely made book. It was merely a wad of irregular-shaped bits of paper sandwiched between card covers. That belongs to Captain. She opened the book and read a few lines. Her mouth dropped. Will you look at this? No wonder he never has any money. What do you mean? He spends it on women. You wouldn't think it, would you? Look at this entry. 4 in 1 week. Carrot looked over her shoulder. On the bed, Vimes snored. There, on the page, in Vimes' curly handwriting, were the words, Mrs. Gaskin, Mincing Street, $5. Mrs. Skurrick, Treacle Street, $4. Mrs. Maroon, Wixon's Alley, $4. Annabelle Curry, Lob Sneaks, $2. Annabelle Curry couldn't have been much good for only $2, said Ingua. She was aware of a sudden drop in temperature. I shouldn't think so, said Carrot slowly. She's only 9 years old. One of his hands gripped her wrist tightly, and the other prized the book out of her fingers. Hey, let go! Sergeant, shouted Carrot over his shoulder. Can you come up here a moment? Angua tried to pull away. Carrot's arm was as immovable as an iron bar.
There was the creak of Colin's foot on the stair, and the door swung open. He was holding a very small cup and a pair of tongs. Nobby got the coffee, he began, and stopped. Sergeant, said Carrot, staring into Angwall's face. Lance Constable Angwall wants to know about Mrs. Gaskin. Old Leggy Gaskin's widow. She lives in Mincing Street. And Mrs. Skirk? And Treacle Street. Takes in laundry now. Sergeant Colin looked from one to the other, trying to get a handle on the situation. Mrs. Maroon. That's Sergeant Maroon's widow. She sells Colin. How about Annabelle Curry? She still goes to the Spiteful Sisters of Seven-Headed Sec Charity School, doesn't she? Colin smiled nervously at Angwa, still not sure of what was happening. She's the daughter of Corporal Curry, but of course he was before your time. Angwa looked up at Carrot's face. His expression was unreadable. There are the Widows of Coppers, she said. He nodded, and one orphan. It's a tough old life, said Colin. No pensions for widows, see. He looked from one to the other. Is there something wrong, he said. Carrot relaxed his grip, turned, slipped the book into the box, and shut the lid. No, he said. Look, I'm sorry. Angle began. Carrot ignored her and nodded at the sergeant. Give him the coffee. But $14, that's nearly half his pay. Carrot picked up Vimes' limp arm and tried to pry his fist open. But even though Vimes was out cold, the fingers were locked. I mean, half his pay. I don't know what he's holding in here, said Carrot, ignoring her. Maybe it's a clue. He took the coffee and hauled up Vimes by his collar. You just drink this, Captain, he said, and everything will look a lot clearer. Glossian coffee had an even bigger sobering effect than an unexpected brown envelope from the taxman. In fact, coffee enthusiasts take the precaution of getting thoroughly drunk before touching the stuff, because Glossian coffee takes you back through sobriety and, if you're not careful, out the other side, where the mind of man should not go. The watch was generally of the opinion that Samuel Vimes was at least two drinks under par, and needed a stiff double even to be sober. Careful, careful, Carrot let a few drops dribble between Vimes's lips. Look, when I said Angle began, forget it, Carrot didn't even look around. I said forget it. Vimes opened his eyes, took a look at the world, and screamed. Nobby, yes, Sarge? Did you buy the Red Desert Special or the Curly Mountain Straight? Red Desert, Sarge, because you could have said. Better get me... He glanced at Vimes' grimace of horror. Half a glass of Bearhuggers. We've sent him too far the other way. The glass was fetched and administered. Vimes unstiffened as it took effect. His palm uncurled. Oh my God, said Angwa. Have we got any bandages? The sky was a little white circle high above. Where the hell are we, partner, said Cuddy. Cave. No caves under Ankh-Morpork. It's on loan. Cuddy had fallen about 30 feet, but had cushioned the fall because he landed on Detritus's head. The troll had been sitting, surrounded by rotting woodwork in, well, a cave. Or, Cuddy thought as his eyes grew accustomed to the gloom, a stone-lined tunnel. I didn't do nothing, said Detritus. I just stood there, next minute everything going past upward. Cuddy reached down and into the mud underfoot and brought up a piece of wood. It was very thick. It was also very rotten. We fell through something into something, he said. He ran his hand over the carved tunnel wall. And this is good masonry. Very good. How we get out? There was no way to climb back. The tunnel roof was much higher than Detritus. We walk out, I think, said Cuddy. He sniffed the air, which was dank. Dwarves have a very good sense of direction underground. This way, he added, setting off. Cuddy? Yes? No one ever say there are tunnels under the city. No one know about them. So there no way out, because way out is way in, too. And if no one know about tunnels, then it cause no way in. But they've got to lead somewhere. Okay, black mud, more or less dry, made a path at the bottom of the tunnel. There was slime on the walls, too, indicating that at some point in the recent past, the tunnels have been full of water.
Here and there, huge patches of fungi, luminous with decay, cast a faint glow over the ancient stonework. Cuddy felt his spirits lift as he plodded toward the through the darkness. Dwarfs always felt happier underground. "Bound to find a way out," he said. "Right. So, how come you joined the watch? "Huh. My girl, Ruby, she say, you want get married, you get proper job. I not marry a troll who people say him no good troll, him thick as a short plank of wood." Detritus' voice echoed in the darkness. "How about you?" "I got bored. I worked for my brother-in-law, Durance. He's got a good business making fortune rats for dwarf restaurants. But I thought, this isn't a proper job for a dwarf. Sound like easy job to me. I had the devil of a time getting them to swallow the fortunes." Cuddy stopped. A change in the air suddenly suggested a vaster tunnel up ahead. And indeed, the tunnel opened into the side of a much larger one. There was deep mud on the floor, in the middle of which ran a trickle of water. Cuddy fancied he heard rats, or what he hoped were rats, scuttle away into the dark emptiness. He even thought he could hear the sounds of the city, indistinct and intermingled, filtering through the air, through the earth. "It's like a temple," he said, and his voice boomed away into the distance. "Writing here on walls," said Detritus. Cuddy peered at the letters hacked deeply into the stone. "Via Cloaca," he said. "Well, now, via is an old word for street or way. Cloaca means..." He peered into the gloom. "This is a sewer," he said. "What that?" "It's like, well, where do trolls dump their rubbish?" said Cuddy. "In street," said Detritus. "Hygienic. This is an underground street, just for, well, for crap," said Cuddy. "I never knew Ankh-Morpork had them." "Maybe Ankh-Morpork didn't know Ankh-Morpork had them," said Detritus. "Right, you're right. This place is old. We're in the bowels of the earth. And Ankh-Morpork, even the shit, have a street to itself," said Detritus, awe and wonder in his voice. "Truly, this is a land of opportunity." "Here's some more writing," said Cuddy. He scraped away some slime. "Siron the Fourth Mephabricat," he read aloud. "He was one of the early kings, wasn't he? Hey, do you know what that means?" "No one's been down here since yesterday," said Detritus. "No, this place is more than 2,000 years old. We're quite probably the first people to come down here since yesterday," said the troll. "Yesterday? Yesterday? What's yesterday got to do with it?" "Footprints still fresh," said Detritus. He pointed. "There were footprints in the mud." "How long have you lived here?" said Cuddy, suddenly feeling very conspicuous in the middle of the tunnel. 9 years. That is the number of years I have lived here. 9, said Detritus proudly. "Only one of a large number of numbers I can count." 2. Have you ever heard of tunnels under the city?" "No. Someone knows about them, though." "Yes. What shall we do?" The answer was inevitable. They'd chased a man into the pork futures warehouse and nearly died. Then they'd ended up in the middle of a small war and nearly died. Now they were in a mysterious tunnel where there were fresh footprints. "If Corporal Carrot or Sergeant Cullen said, 'And what did you do then?' neither of them could face up to the thought of saying, 'We came back.'" "The footprints go this way," said Cuddy, "and then they return. But the ones coming back aren't so deep as the ones going. You can see they're later ones because they're over the top of the other ones." So he was heavier going than he was coming back. "Yes?" "Right," said Detritus. "So that means he lose weight? He was carrying something, and he left it, up ahead somewhere." They stared at the darkness. "So we go and find what it was," said Detritus. "I think so. How do you feel?" "Feel okay. Different species, though they were. Their minds have focused on a single image involving a muzzle flash and a lead slug singing through the subterranean night." "He came back," said Cuddy. "Yes," said Detritus. They looked at the darkness again.
It has not been a nice day, said Cuddy. That the truth. I'd just like to know something, in case I mean... Look, what happened in the pork store? You did all that maths. All that counting. I dunno, I saw it all. All what? Just all of it. Everything. All the numbers in the world. I could count them all. What did they equal? Dunno, what does equal mean? They trudged on to see what the future held. The trail led eventually into a narrower tunnel, barely wide enough for the troll to stand upright. Finally, they could go no further. A stone had dropped out of the roof, and rubble and mud had percolated through, blocking the tunnel. But that didn't matter, because they'd found what they were looking for, even though they hadn't been looking for it. Oh dear, said Detritus. Very definitely, said Cuddy. He looked around vaguely. You know, he said, I reckon these tunnels are usually full of water. They're well below the normal river level. He looked back at the pathetic discovery. There's going to be a lot of trouble about this, he said. It's his badge, said Carrot. Good grief. He's holding it so tight it's cut right into his hand. Technically, Ankh-Morpork is built on loam. But what it is mainly built on is Ankh-Morpork. It has been constructed, burned down, silted up, and rebuilt so many times that its foundations are old cellars, buried roads, and the fossil bones and middens of earlier cities. Below these, in the darkness, sat the troll and the dwarf. What we doing now? We ought to leave it here and fetch Corporal Carrot. He'll know what to do. Detritus looked over his shoulder at the thing behind them. I don't like that, he said. It not right to leave it here. Right, yes, you're right, but you're a troll, and I'm a dwarf. What do you think would happen if people saw us carrying that along the streets? Big trouble, correct. Come on, let's follow the footprints back out. Supposing it gone when we come back, said Detritus, lumbering to his feet. How? And we're following the tracks out, so if whoever it was who put it there comes back, we'll run straight into them. Oh, good. I'm glad you said that. Vime sat on the edge of his bed while Angua bandaged his hand. Captain Quirk, said Carrot, but he's not a good choice. Mayonnaise Quirk, we used to call him, said Cullen. He's a pillock. Don't tell me, said Angua. He's rich, thick, and oily. Yes? And smells faintly of eggs, said Carrot. Plumes in the helmet, said Cullen. And a breastplate you can see your face in. Well, Carrot's got one of those, too, said Nobby. Yes, but the difference is, Carrot keeps his armor polished because he likes nice, clean armor, said Carrot loyally. While Quirk keeps it shiny because he's a pillock. But he's wrapped up the case, said Nobby. I heard about it when I went out for the coffee. He's arrested Coalface, the troll. You know, Captain, the privy cleaner. Someone saw him near Rhyme Street just before the dwarf got killed. But he's massive, said Carrot. He couldn't have got through the door. He's got a motive, said Nobby. Yes? Yes, Hammerhawk was a dwarf. That's not a motive. It is for a troll. Anyway, if he didn't do that, he probably did something. There's plenty of evidence against him. Like what? Said Angua. He's a troll. That's not evidence. It is to Captain Quirk, said Sergeant. He's bound to have done something, Nobby repeated. In this, he was echoing the patrician's view of crime and punishment. If there was crime, there should be punishment. If the specific criminal should be involved in the punishment process, then this was a happy accident. But if not, then any criminal would do. And since everyone is undoubtedly guilty of something, the net result was that, in general terms, justice was done. He's a nasty piece of work, that Coalface, said Cullen. A right-hand troll for Chrysoprase. Yes, but he couldn't have killed Bjorn. said Carrot. "And what about the beggar girl?" Vime sat looking at the floor. "What do you think, Captain?" said Carrot. Vime shrugged. "Who cares?" he said. "Well, you care," said Carrot. "You always care. We can't let even someone like..." "Listen to me," said Vimes in a small voice. "Supposing we'd found who killed the dwarf and the clown. Or the girl. It wouldn't make any difference. It's all rotten anyway." "What is, Captain?" "All of it. You might try and empty a well with a sieve. Let the assassins try to sort it out. Or the thieves. He can try the rats next. Why not? We're not the people for this. We ought to have just stayed with ringing our bells and shouting, 'All's well.' But all isn't well, Captain," said Carrot. "So what? When has that ever mattered?" "Oh dear," said Angua, under her breath. "I think perhaps you gave him too much of that coffee." Vime said, "I'm retiring from the watch tomorrow. 25 years on the streets." Nobby started to grin nervously and stopped as the sergeant, without apparently shifting position, grabbed one of his arms and twisted it gently but meaningfully up his back. "And what good's it all been? What good have I done? I've just worn out a lot of boots. There's no place in Ankh Morpork for policemen. Who cares what's right or wrong? Assassins and thieves and trolls and dwarfs. Might as well have a bloody king and have done with it." The rest of the night watch stood looking at their feet in mute embarrassment. Then Carrot said, "It's better to light a candle than curse the darkness, Captain." "That's what they say." "What?" Vime's sudden rage was like a thunderclap. "Who says that? When has that ever been true?" "It's never been true. It's the kind of thing people say without power say. The kind of thing people without power say to make it all seem less bloody awful. But it's just words. It never makes any difference." Someone hammered at the door. "That'll be Quark," said Vimes. "You're to hand over your weapons. The night watch is being stood down for a day. Can't have coppers running around upsetting things, can we?" "Open the door, Carrot." "But," Carrot began. "That was an order. I might not be any good for anything else, but I can bloody well order you to open the door. So open the door." Quark was accompanied by half a dozen members of the Day Watch. They had crossbows, in deference to the fact that they were doing a mildly unpleasant job involving fellow officers. They had them pointed slightly downward. In deference to the fact that they weren't damn fools, they had the safety catches off. Quark wasn't actually a bad man. He didn't have the imagination. He dealt more in that sort of generalized low-grade unpleasantness which slightly tarnishes the soul of all who come into contact with it. Many people are in jobs that are a little beyond them, but there are ways of reacting to the situation. Sometimes they're flustered and nice, sometimes they're Quark. Quark handled them with the maxim, "It doesn't matter if you're right or wrong, so long as you're definite." There was, on the whole, no real racial prejudice. In Ankh Morpork, when you've got dwarfs and trolls, the mere color of other humans is not a major item. But Quark was the kind of man to whom it comes naturally to pronounce the word negro with two G's. He had a hat with plumes in it. Come in," said Vimes. "It wasn't as if we were doing anything." "Captain Vimes." "It's all right, we know. Give him your weapons, people." "That's an order. Carrot, one official issue sword, one pike or halberd, one nightstick or truncheon, one crossbow." "That's right, isn't it, Sergeant Cullen?" "Yes, sir." Carrot hesitated only a moment. "Oh, well," he said, "my official sword is in the rack." "What's that one in your belt?" Carrot said nothing. However, he shifted position slightly. His bicep strained against the leather of his jerkin. "Official sword, right," said Quark. He churned. He was one of those people who would recoil from an assault on strength, but attack weakness without mercy. Where's the grit sucker?" he said. "And the rock." "Ah," said Vines, "you're referring to those representative members of our fellow sapient races who have chosen to throw in their lot with the people of this city." "I mean the dwarf and the troll," said Quark. "Haven't the faintest idea," said Vimes cheerfully. It seemed to Angua that he was drunk again, if people could get drunk on despair. "We dunno, sir," said Carrot Colin. "Haven't seen him all day." Probably fighting up in Quarry Lane with the rest of them, said Quirk. You can't trust people of that type. You ought to know that. And it also seemed to Angwell that although words like huff, pint, and gritsucker were offensive, they were as terms of universal brotherhood compared to words like people of their type in the mouth of men like Quirk. Much to her shock, she found her gaze concentrating on the man's jugular vein. Fighting, said Kara. Why? Quirk shrugged. Who knows? Let me think now, said Vimes. It could be something to do with a wrongful arrest. Could be something to do with some of the more restless dwarfs just needing any excuse to have a go at trolls. What do you think, Quirk? I don't think, Vimes. Good man. You're just the type the city needs. Vimes stood up. I'll be going then, he said. I'll see you all tomorrow, if there is one. The door slammed behind him. This hall was huge. It was the size of a city square, with pillars every few yards to support the roof. The tunnels radiated off in every direction, and at various heights in the walls. Water trickled out of many of them, from small springs and underground streams. And that was the problem. The film of running water over the stone floor of the hall had wiped away traces of the footprints. A very large tunnel, almost blocked with debris and silt, led off in what Cuddy was pretty sure was the direction of the estuary. It was almost pleasant. There was no smell other than a damp, under a stone mustiness. And it was cool. I've seen big dwarf halls in the mountains, said Cuddy. But I've got to admit, this is something else. His voice echoed back and forth in the chamber. Oh, yes, said Atreus. It's got to be something else, because it's not a dwarf fall in the mountains. Can you see any way up? No. We could have passed a dozen ways to the surface and not known it. Yes, said the troll. It's a knotty problem. Detritus? Yes. Did you know you're getting smarter again down here in the cool? Really? Can you use it to think of a way out? Digging, said the troll suggested. There were fallen blocks here and there in the tunnels. Not many. The place had been well built. Nah, haven't got a shovel, said Cuddy. Detritus nodded. Give me your breastplate, he said. He leaned up against the wall. His fist pounded into it a few times. He handed it back. It was more or less shovel-shaped. It's a long way up, Cuddy said doubtfully. But we know the way, said Detritus. It's either that or stay down here eating rat for the rest of your life. Cuddy hesitated. The idea had a certain appeal. Without ketchup, Detritus added. I think I saw a fallen stone just away back there, said the dwarf. Captain Quirk looked around the washroom with the air of one who was doing the scenery a favor by glancing at it. Nice place, this, he said. I think we'll move in here. Better than the quarters near the palace. But we're here, said Sergeant Cullen. You'll just have to squash up, said Captain Quirk. He glanced at Angua. Her stare was getting on his nerves. There'll be a few changes, too, he said. Behind him, the door creaked open. A small, smelly dog limped in. But Lord Ventnary hasn't said who's commanding Night Watch, said Carrot. Oh, yes? Seems to me, said Quirk, that it's not likely to be one of you lot, eh? Seems to me it's likely the watches will be combined. Seems to me there's too much sloppiness around the place. Seems to me there's a bit too much of a ragtag. He glanced at Angua again. The way she was looking at him was putting him off. Seems to me, Quirk began again, and then noticed the dog. Look at this, he said. Dog's in the watch house. He kicked Caspode hard and grinned as the dog ran yelping under the table. What about Lettuce Nibs, the beggar girl, said Angua. No troll killed her, or the clown. You got to see the big picture, said Quirk. Mr. Captain, said a low voice from under the table, audible at a conscious level only to Angua. You got an itchy bottom. What big picture's this, then, said Sergeant Cullen. Got to think in terms of the whole city, said Quirk. He shifted uneasily. Really itchy, said the sub-table voice. You feel all right, Captain Quirk, said Angua. The captain squirmed. Prickle, 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 said the voice. I mean, some things are important. Some ain't, said Quirk. Arr! Sorry. Prickle.
Can't hang around here talking to you all day, said Cork. You, report to me. Report to me tomorrow afternoon. Prickle, 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 about face. The day watch scurried out, with Cork hopping and squirming in, as it were, the rear. My word, he seemed anxious to get away, said Carrot. Yes, said Angle. I can't think why. They looked at one another. Is that it, said Carrot? No more night watch? It's generally very quiet in the Unseen University Library. There's people, the shuffling of feet as wizards wander between the shelves, the occasional hacking cough to disturb the academic silence, and every once in a while a dying scream as an unwary student fails to treat an old magical book with the caution it deserves. Consider orangutans. In all the worlds graced by their presence, it is suspected that they can talk but choose not to do so in case humans put them to work, possibly in the television industry. In fact, they can talk. It's just that they talk in orangutan. Humans are only capable of listening in bewilderment. The librarian of Unseen University had unilaterally decided to aid comprehension by producing an orangutan human dictionary. He'd been working on it for 3 months. It wasn't easy. He got as far as Ook. Which can mean, well, meanings include, pardon me, you're hanging from my rubber ring. Thank you so very much. It may be just vital biomass oxygenating the planet to you, but it's home to me, and I'm sure there was a rainforest around here a moment ago. He was down the stacks, where it was cool, and suddenly someone was singing. He took the pen out of his foot and listened. A human would have decided they couldn't believe their ears. Orangs are more sensible. If you won't believe your own ears, whose ears will you believe? Someone was singing underground, or trying to sing. The chthonic voices were something like this. Dlog, glod, dlog, glod. Listen, you troll, it's the simplest song there is. Look, like this. Gold, 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 gold. Gold, 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 gold. No, that's the second verse. There was also the rhythmical sound of dirt being shoveled and rubble being moved. The librarian considered matters for a while. So, a dwarf and a troll, he preferred both species to humans. For one thing, neither of them were great readers. The librarian was, of course, very much in favor of reading in general, but readers in particular got on his nerves. There was something, well, sacrilegious about the way they kept taking books off the shelves and wearing out the words by reading them. He liked people who loved and respected books, and the best way to do that, in the librarian's opinion, was to leave them on the shelves where nature intended them to be. The muffled voices seemed to be getting closer. Gold, gold, gold. Now you're singing the chorus. On the other hand, there were proper ways of entering a library. He waddled over to the shelves and selected Hump Tulip's seminal work, How to Kill Insects, all 2,000 pages of it. Vimes felt quite lighthearted as he walked up Schoon Avenue. He was aware that there was an inner Vimes screaming his head off. He ignored him. You couldn't be a real copper in Ankh-Morpork and stay sane. You had to care, and caring in Ankh-Morpork was like opening a tin of meat in the middle of a piranha school. Everyone dealt with it in their own way. Colin never thought about it, and Nobby didn't worry about it, and the new ones hadn't been in long enough to be worn down by it, and Carrot was just himself. Hundreds of people died in the city every day, often of suicide. So what did a few more matter? The Vimes inside hammered on the walls. There were quite a few coaches outside the Ramkin mansion, and the place seemed to be infested with a sort of female relatives and interchangeable Emmas. They were banking through things and polishing things. Vimes strolled through, more or less unregarded. He found Sybil out in the dragon house in her rubber boots and protective dragon armor. She was mucking out, apparently blissfully unaware of the controlled uproar in the mansion. She looked up as the door shut behind Vimes. "Oh, there you are. You're home early," she said. "I can't stand the fuss, so I came out here. But I'll have to go and change soon." She stopped when she saw his expression. "There's something wrong, isn't there?" "I'm not going back," said Vimes. "Really? Last week you said you'd do a full watch. You said you were looking forward to it." So not much gets past Sybil, old Sybil, Vimes thought. She patted his hand. "I'm glad you're out of it," she said. Corporal Knobs darted into the watch house and slammed the door behind him. "Well," said Carrot. "It's not good," said Nobby. "They say the trolls are planning to march into the palace to get Coalface out. There's gangs of dwarves and trolls wandering around looking for trouble. And beggars. Lettuce was very popular. And there's a lot of guild people out there, too. The city," he said importantly, "is definitely a keg of number one powder." "How do you get the idea of camping out on the open plains?" said Colin. "How do you like the idea of camping out on the open plains?" said Colin. "What's that got to do with it? If anyone puts a match to anything tonight, it's goodbye, Unc." "And the sergeant," said the sergeant morosely. "Usually we can shut the city gates, right? But there's hardly more than a few feet of water in the river." "You flood the city just to put out fires," said Angua. "Yep. Another thing," said Nobby. "People threw stuff at me." Carrot had been staring at the wall. Now he produced a small, battered black book from his pocket and started to thumb through the pages. "Tell me," he said, in a slightly distant voice, "has there been an irretrievable breakdown of law and order?" "Yeah, for about 500 years," said Colin. "Irretrievable breakdown of law and order is what Ankh-Morpork is all about." "No, I mean more than usual. It's important." Carrot turned a page. His lips moved silently as he read. "Throwing stuff at me sounds like a breakdown in law and order," said Nami. He was aware of their expression. "I don't think we could make that stick," said Colin. "It stuck all right," said Nami. "And some of it went down my shirt." "Why throw things at you?" said Angua. "It's because I was a watchman," said Nobby. The dwarfs didn't like the watch. Because of Mr. Hammerhawk and the troll. And the trolls didn't like the watch because of Coalface being arrested. And people don't like the watch because of all these angry dwarfs and trolls around. Someone thumped at the door. "That's probably an angry mop right now," said Nobby. Carrot opened the door. "No, it's not an angry mob," he announced. "Ook! It's an orangutan carrying a stunned dwarf followed by a troll. But he is quite angry, if that's any help."
Lady Ramkin's butler, Willikins, had filled him a big bath. Ha! Tomorrow it'd be his butler and his bath. And this wasn't one of the old hip baths, dragged in front of the fire jobs. No, the Ramkin mansion collected water off the roof in a big cistern, after straining out the pigeons, and then it was heated by an ancient geyser and flowed along drumming, groaning lead pipes to a pair of mighty brass taps, and then into an enameled tub. There were things laid out on a fluffy towel beside it. Huge scrubbing brushes, three kinds of soap, a loofah. Wilkins was standing patiently beside the bath, like a barely heated towel rack. "Yes?" said Vimes. "His lordship, that is, her ladyship's father. He required to have his back scrubbed," said Wilkins. "You go and help the old geyser stoke the furnace." Said Vimes firmly. Left alone, he struggled out of his breastplate and threw it in the corner. The chainmail shirt followed it, and the helmet, and the money pouch, and various leather and cotton oddments that came between a watchman and the world. And then he sank, gingerly at first, into the suds. "Try soap. Soap will work," said Detritus. "Hold still, will you?" said Carrot. "You're twisting my head off. Go on. Soap him head. Soap your own head." There was a thung noise and Cuddy's helmet came free. Cuddy emerged, blinking into the light. He focused on the librarian and growled. "He hit me on the head. Ook!" "He says you came up through the floor," said Carrot. "That's no reason to hit me on the head." Some of the things that come up through the floor at Unseen University don't even have a head, said Carrot. Ook! Or they have hundreds. Why were you digging down there? We weren't digging down, we were digging up. Carrot sat and listened. He interrupted only twice. Shot at you? 5 times, said Detritus happily. Have to report damage to the breastplate, but not to to backplate, on account of, fortunately, my body got in way, saving valuable city property. Worth $3. Carrot listened some more. Sewers, he said eventually. It's like the whole city, underground. We saw crowns and stuff carved on the walls. Carrot's eyes sparkled. That means they must date right back to the days when we had kings. And then, when we kept on rebuilding the city, we forgot they were down there. That's not all that's down there, said Cuddy. We found something. Oh? Something bad. You won't like it at all, said Detritus. Bad, bad, bad. Even worse. We thought it would be best to leave it there, said Cuddy, on account of it being evidence. But you ought to see it. It's going to upset everything, said the troll, warming to the part. What was it? If we tell you, you say, stupid ethnic people, you pulling my leg off, said Detritus. So you'd better come and see, said Cuddy. Sergeant Colton looked at the rest of the watch. All of us, he said nervously, or shouldn't a couple of senior officers stay up here in case anything happens? Do you mean in case anything happens up here, said Angua tartly, or in case anything happens down there? I'll go with Lance Constable Cuddy and Lance Constable Detritus, said Carrot. I don't think anyone else ought to come. But it could be dangerous, said Angua. If I find who's been shooting at Watchmen, said Carrot, it will be. Samuel Vimes reached up with a big toe and turned on the hot tap. There was a respectful knock at the door, and Wilkins, old retainered in. Would sir be wanting anything? Vimes thought about it. Lady Ramkins said you wouldn't be wanting any alcohol, said Wilkins, as if reading his thoughts. Did she? Emphatically, sir. But I have here a very fine cigar. He winced as Vimes bit the end off and spat it over the side of the bath, but produced some matches and lit it for him. Thank you, Wilkins. What's your first name? First name, sir. I mean, what do people call you when they've got to know you better? Wilkins, sir. Oh, right, then. Well, you may go, Wilkins. Yes, sir. Vimes lay back in the warm water. The inner voice was still in there somewhere, but he tried not to pay any attention. About now, it was saying, you'd be proceeding along the Street of Small Gods, just by the bit of Old City wall where you could stop and smoke a roll-up out of the wind. To drown it out, he started to sing at the top of his voice. The cavernous sewers under the city echoed with human and near-human voices for the first time in millennia. Hi-ho! Hi-ho! Ook, 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 ook! You are stupid! I can't help it. It's my nearly dwarfish blood. We just like singing underground. It comes naturally to us. All right. But why him singing? Him ape? He's a people person. They'd brought torches. Shadows jumped among the pillars in the big cavern and fled along the tunnels. Whatever the possible lurking dangers, Carrot was beside himself with the joy of